My Pilgrimage with the Pilgrim. You might be wondering why I am presenting the introduction to this retreat. Many of you have been coming to the retreat for 10 years, and Olich and I are always the behind-the-scenes people. We do the mailings, organize the locations and the speakers, and prepare the snacks. I truly enjoy preparing for the retreat because I learn so much in the preparation for the day, as well as get inspired by the speakers for the day. In preparing the handouts and the games, I do a lot of reading prior to the retreat. The preparation typically starts when we decide on the topic, often a year in advance. I've quite selfishly selected topics that I want to learn more about. So last July, at the UOL convention, while I was trying to convince our speakers to speak at the retreat, I came to Father Basil. Father Basil is one of my favorite speakers, so he is always one of my first choices. Sometimes I think he cringes when he sees me because I'm always asking for something. When I was asking Father Basil to speak, he asked me about the topic for the retreat, and I shared with him that the retreat would focus on the book, The Way of a Pilgrim. This topic is a little different from other retreats, and he asked me about the topic, so I shared with him My Pilgrimage with the Pilgrim. I shared with him that I'd read the book many years ago and was not particularly moved by it. But last year, during Lent, Olich and I went to a used book trading store, and I found it and bought it. When I started reading it last year during Lent, I couldn't stop. I read it several times. I gave it to Olich to read. I gave it to my mom to read. Several of my friends read it. I was like the pilgrim. I couldn't stop reading it. I read it over several times during Lent last year. In fact, I carried it with me. That is how My Pilgrimage with the Pilgrim began. This notion that things are more meaningful when you are ready is a theme in the book. I'd read it before and it didn't have any impact, but this time, by the grace of God, not only did I read it, but other things made more sense. One of the themes of the book is related to practice and discipline, being open to the messages God is sending us. I think that I was more receptive to the message from the pilgrim because it was during Lent. I was trying to pray more and reading more spiritual books. Because it was Lent, I feel like my heart was open to the beauty of this book. Father Basil agreed to speak at the retreat and encouraged me to share how this book moved me, what it means to me. So here I am. I am nervous about speaking with you, but also very grateful for the encouragement to speak, because it continued my pilgrimage with the pilgrim. It encouraged me to read and reread the book. So the Monday after the convention, I started reading it again and have read it multiple times. At this point, I cannot tell you how many times I've read it, but it is definitely more than 10. I started taking notes of the sections that were particularly profound to me. I know that reading it over and over has changed me. For Christmas, I got this beautiful journal and was not sure about how to use it. So I decided that I would take notes from the book and write down the sections that were moving to me and also take notes from the Philokalia. As part of this pilgrimage with the pilgrim, I started reading the Philokalia, the book he carries. In my favorite version of the book, I now have three versions of the book, the one I purchased in the bookstore, the one I had for many years ago, and one I purchased recently when I went to a book club at a Greek Orthodox church that was focused on the book. My favorite version is the original because it feels more Slavic to me. I think it was a gift to Sunday school teachers many years ago, and it has a beautiful foreword from Father Benedict. I feel that I am a kindred spirit with Father Benedict from the introduction. He describes his personal path with the pilgrim and states that as a Catholic priest, he found an elder, a Staritz, who was his guide, his mentor. The elder told him that if he practiced the Jesus prayer, he would become Orthodox, for nothing would satisfy him. He adds in his foreword that if one reads this book and begins the prayer, it will make you Orthodox. I have photocopied his foreword for you to read. His words are absolutely beautiful. He describes his journey with the pilgrim and the practice of the Jesus prayer, as Father Benedict describes it, leading to the very heart of God, a journey beyond words. So, to prepare for this day, I started reading The Pilgrim the Monday after the convention. I started writing down the words that were inspiring and started with the first words of the book. By the grace of God, I am a Christian, by my deeds, a great sinner, and by calling, a homeless rover of the lowest status in life. The book is written in the first person, almost like a diary, but it is so much more profound. Interestingly, this year, there was a discussion group at a local Orthodox church, and they focused on the way of a pilgrim. Surprisingly, and quite alarming to me, some in the group had such a different reaction to the book, and stated that when they had read these first words, they became angry with the pilgrim because he wasn't working. Some even called him a parasite. I have to say, I was angry. I felt defensive of the pilgrim. How could they say that about him? By this point, I'd been on a pilgrimage with him for about a year. How could he be so misunderstood? I have to say, it was also a good message for me, for it made me think about how incredibly different we are, and prepared me for the notion that there might be some here today who are, or were, equally angered by the pilgrim. I think this is an important point in my pilgrimage with him, and a lesson in humility. I later thought about how he would have responded to me, and also those calling him a parasite. He probably would not have been angry. He would have prayed for all of us and humbly asked for mercy for all of us, including me, for being angry and judging those in the book club. For me, however, when I read the first words of the book, my reaction was so different from the book club. For me, the words resonate so beautifully. He is so humble. By the grace of God, I am a Christian. By my deeds, a great sinner, and by calling, a homeless rover of the lowest status in life. I am so touched by his humility. The shortest chapter of the book is about him, the story of his life. His life is difficult. He is handicapped. He loses his wife. He loses his house. When he gets beaten, he does not get angry. In fact, he sees all of these circumstances as ones that bring him closer to God, and in each of these, he has such profound humility. He tries to get to Jerusalem, but he never gets to Jerusalem. This is also an interesting parallel for me, for this year we traveled with the group to Jerusalem. Oleg and I have also traveled to some of the holiest sites in Ukraine that he visited, Pechersk'a Lavra and Pochayiv. He never gets to Jerusalem, at least not in the physical sense, but he does get closer to God. It is the process that is ever deeper, more profound, more intense. The journey is one that is continuous, and often as the journey continues, the challenges are more difficult. As we learn more as Christians, as God blesses us with some understanding, we have more responsibility, and the responsibility is greater. Our pilgrim starts his pilgrimage. He is challenged. When he's challenged, his status, his elder, clearly teaches him that the kingdom of darkness uses every means at its disposal to hold you back and to prevent you from prayer. In many ways, there are always forces working against us when we are trying to grow closer to God. I kind of relate this to the Spider-Man theme. In the Spider-Man movies, he learns that with great power comes great responsibility. For superheroes, and for all of us, we need to work at it. There is never a time when we get there. Spiritual growth is a continuous journey. There is no off-season, and with each step, there's another rung of the ladder. As soon as we think we move one rung up the ladder, something happens that knocks us down a bit, and we need to keep on trying. We need to constantly combat the forces that might be working against us, including our own selves. Our pilgrim is ever vigilant, always praying, always fighting the good fight. So, how does he get there? Well, it starts with the pilgrim going to church on the 24th Sunday after Pentecost, hearing the epistle of Paul to the Thessalonians 5:17, to pray without ceasing. In many ways, his story is simple. It is told as a parable, a journey that is more than the words used to describe it, a lesson on how to grow closer to God. He puts his faith in God totally and grew closer and closer to God through prayer. In my reading of the book, I would write down the words that inspired me. I then thought about ways to organize the ideas that were profound to me. Early in my pilgrimage with the pilgrim, I found the words of St. Maximus the Confessor that served as the cornerstone of my understanding. St. Maximus the Confessor in the Philokalia writes, this is quoted directly from St. Maximus, "The passion of pride arises from two kinds of ignorance, and when these kinds of ignorance unite together, they form a single confused state of mind. For a man is proud only if he is ignorant both of divine help and of human weakness. Therefore, pride is a lack of knowledge of both the divine and in the human spheres. When I read these words, it was absolutely clear how I would organize my talk with you today. There are two great ignorances that confuse the mind. These are, number one, the first, the ignorance of divine power, the ignorance of the greatness of God, and number two, the ignorance of human weakness. These words have been pivotal to me in the last year as I have continued my pilgrimage. This organization of these ideas has been a tremendous spiritual guide for me. I would like to organize my talk about the pilgrim with these two fundamental principles. Number one, the wonder of God, how great God is. And number two, humility, how weak, how flawed we are. These two principles help us to face all challenges and were essential in the pilgrim's journey. With the understanding of the greatness of God and our own inadequacy comes the yearning to get closer to God. So let's start with the wonder of God, the greatness of God. I love that on the Sunday of Orthodoxy, we sing the beautiful hymn, "Who is a God as great as our God? You are the God who creates miracles." The words are beautiful, and the melody resonates the message of God's greatness. As we are starting our Lenten journeys on the Sunday of Orthodoxy, we are reminded to think of the greatness of God. One of the things learned from the pilgrim is that a foundational component of prayer and faith is being in total awe of God, recognizing the greatness of God. At times, we seem to forget the greatness of God. The pilgrim, as he begins to pray the Jesus Prayer, states, "I was profoundly moved in recognizing God's presence in all things." This type of awareness can be intoxicating, to see the beauty in all God has created. Our pilgrim describes his own intoxication with the beauty of the world. It was as though the trees, the grass, the birds, the earth, the air, and the light were saying they existed for the sake of man, in testimony and proof of the love of God for mankind. The pilgrim directly tells us how to maintain this wonder of the greatness of God. Remember God always, everywhere, in all situations. Whatever you do, keep your mind on the Maker of all things. When you behold light, remember who gives it to you. When you see heaven and earth and sea and all they contain, be in awe and give praise to their Creator. When you put on your clothes, remember whose gift they are and give thanks to Him who takes care of your needs. In a word, remember and praise God in all of your actions, and you will be praying unceasingly, and your soul will be filled with gladness. During pre-sanctified liturgy, we read Psalm 103. I love Psalm 103, where the beauty of the world is so clearly outlined. O Lord, my God, you are very great. Bless the Lord, O my soul, O Lord my God, you are very great. You are clothed with majesty, who cover yourself with light as with a garment, who stretch out the heavens like a curtain. He lays the beams of his chambers in the waters, who makes the clouds his chariot, who walks on the wings of the wind, who makes his angel spirits, his ministers of flaming fire. You who laid the foundations of the earth, that it should not be moved forever. You covered it with the deep as with a garment. The waters stood above the mountains. They went up over the mountains. They went down by the valleys to the place which you founded for them. You have set a bound that they may not pass over, that they may not return to cover the earth. He sends the springs into the valleys that flow among the hills. They give drink to every beast of the field. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. By them shall the birds of the heaven have their home. They sing among the branches. He waters the hills from his chambers. The earth is satisfied with the fruit of your works. He causes the grass to grow for the cattle and vegetation for the service of man, that he may bring forth food from the earth and wine that makes glad the heart of man, and oil to make his face shine, and bread which strengthens man's heart. The trees of the Lord are full of sap, the cedars of Lebanon which he has planted. Where the birds make their nests, the stork has her home in the fir trees. He appointed the moon for season. The sun knows it's going down. You make darkness and it is night, in which all of the beasts of the forest creep about. The young lions roar after their prey and seek their food from God. When the sun rises, they gather themselves together and lie down in their dens. Man goes out to his work and to labor until the evening. O Lord, how manifold are your works! In wisdom you have made them all. The earth is full of your riches. I would read the entire psalm, but time does not permit. O Lord, how manifold are your works! In wisdom you have made them all. Manifold is a word that we don't use very often, so I looked it up. It means diverse, multiple, assorted, of many kinds, numerous, and varied. The pilgrim seems to recognize the beauty of all of God's many diverse works. He appreciates the beauty of the world. In carrying the Philokalia, he introduces us to this text. He explains to us that the Philokalia is the key to the mysteries of the scriptures. As he describes it, the Philokalia is the understanding of the language of creation. The word itself, Philokalia, translates to the love of beauty. How amazing, how profound. I also read that The Way of the Pilgrim was first published in 1884, and I read that some believe it was a way to introduce the Philokalia to the faithful. Our pilgrim also explains, God wishes us to leave honorable lives for the love of him and from the eagerness to serve him. This statement had profound impact on me. I think of the times I am in church, and I think of church as an obligation, what I have to do. But if I truly think about how manifold are his works, in wisdom he has created them all, how can I not every moment drop to my knees in sheer adoration and pray in thanks, not obligation, for nothing I could ever do would be worthy of his glory? For a moment, I would like to give you some amazing examples of the beauty of our world. I think that often we forget to take a moment to look around us at the beauty of creation. I marvel at the beauty of our church, the liturgy, the actual physical beauty of the temples. Later today, you'll see slides from some of the most beautiful churches in the world. There is such beauty within the teachings of our church. I would like to take a moment to reflect and appreciate the wisdom associated with Great Lent. It is amazing that the church has dedicated a time for reflection during Lent, a time to grow, that the church sets a time for us to reflect, make amends, to get on track. Fasting is also something that the church established centuries ago. a time when we are encouraged to follow a diet that is one of the healthiest things we can do. O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom you've created them all. Look around us, the beauty of the world, within each other. Oleg and I have traveled to many places. There are so many beautiful places in the world. One that stands out for me is the cliffs in Santorini, looking out on the sunset and seeing the absolutely amazing glowing sky. It was breathtaking. I also think of Mount Precipice in the Holy Land. There was such an amazing sunset with pinks and purples that were beautiful. O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom you've created them all. There are beautiful scenes like these at every turn. I truly appreciate my grandmother. She was one of those people who commented on the beauty of the world. When we would be driving to church, she would comment about a beautiful tree or plant. I try to do that more often, looking at the beauty in every moment. Last week, when I was waiting for the train and the trees were bare, but the dark branches were woven into the perfect blue sky. O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom you have created them all. Think of the amazing beauty in the world and how different it all is. Think of a night filled with stars. I love going to the Poconos, for at night you see a sky full of stars. I also think of times at All Saints Camp in Emlenton where the skies are just full of stars. For 1 second, I would like you to think of a beautiful place you've been to. To visualize it, think of the beauty of this scene and think about what made it beautiful to you. You might have imagined the beach, perhaps the mountains, perhaps a scene early in the morning, the evening, or late at night. What is equally amazing is that each of us have thought of different scenes. How diverse, how varied is God's work? There is beauty in every corner in the world. There is beauty in the desert. There is beauty in the ocean. There is beauty in the mountains. There is beauty in the sky. There is amazing beauty in plants and how they grow, in animals and how they live. O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom you've created them all. Beyond natural scenes and beauty, God also created physical beauty. Take a moment to think about how amazing it is that God created individuals who are so varied. There are multiple types of beautiful people, and we all and each of us have a different view of beauty. There is something so incredibly amazing about that. Sometimes on television, when they have models, I think to myself, wow, she is stunning. And other times, looking at a model, I think, oh, not so much. But others believe her to be beautiful. It is amazing that who I think is beautiful is different from who you think is beautiful, and that there are millions of definitions of beauty. O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom you have created them all. Another amazing creation is music. How is it possible? There are times when a song can transport me to a different time. I played the recording of Sisters from Monastery in Jerusalem as we registered today. How beautiful that human voices can so harmonize. How amazing that emotion can be communicated through different tones. How awe-inspiring that different voices can meld together. How miraculous that we can name a tune in several notes. Similarly, we have instruments that can make sounds and music that can convey emotion. That there can be endless musical tones and creations. O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom you have created them all. Similar to music, I am often inspired by the beauty of words. That is, in fact, part of my love for the pilgrim. His words are so simple, yet so profound. He says so much in telling his story. How beautiful. Also, it is amazing that there are hundreds of languages and that each of those languages create words that are profound. We give credit to the writers and to the musicians, but often not to the creator of all things. O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom you have created them all. How could we possibly say thank you? The message from the pilgrim is that in everything that we need to do, we need to praise and thank God. The pilgrim encourages us to give thanks to God for all things, recognizing God in all the things he has given us. As we ponder God's greatness, the pilgrim also reminds us there are many wonderful things in nature which our minds cannot understand. Just as many beautiful things are related to God's creation, there are countless things we have no way of explaining. The pilgrim explains that we are given these mysteries, these things that are incomprehensible, in order to show us God's rule and provides over everything. The example that first comes to mind from the book is the woman who is healed with the olive oil. In the book, the doctors cannot explain how the woman is healed. We have so many things related to the body that we do not fully understand. Think about the wonders of the body. I heard that Ronald Reagan looked at the ear of his child and by looking at it was convinced that God must exist. I will take the Ronald Reagan example one step further. I once had an ear infection and flew on a plane, resulting in my eardrum bursting. For those of you who do not know, your eardrum grows back. Isn't that absolutely amazing that when damaged, your eardrum grows back? Another similar example, Oleg and I were in a very serious car accident about 10 years ago. During the accident, my spleen was lacerated and I was in intensive care with the possibility of having to go into surgery at any moment. The doctor told me that for lacerated spleens, they had children whose spleens had healed, so they were going to see if my spleen could pull through and I wouldn't need surgery. You'll be happy to know that I stand in front of you with my spleen intact. Students came with the doctor to see me and to recognize how the amazing doctor had saved my spleen. I didn't say it, but I wanted to say he didn't do anything. I was in bed and God healed my spleen. O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom you've created them all. Even in the most tragic situation, there is an amazing healing gift of the body. As a psychologist, I hear horrible, tragic things that have happened, abuse, hurt, pain. It is awe-inspiring that the human spirit has strength to endure. Awe-inspiring and one where we need to consider the creator of all. O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom you've created them all. We often lose this wonder in the world. As St. Maximus would say, we become ignorant of the greatness of God. We need to have wonder and awe of God, and it is important for us to recognize the beauty in the world, the beauty of creation, and to have, as the pilgrim calls it, an insatiable desire to know things more closely, more deeply, as we recognize the greatness of God. Our heart softens to learn more. The one thing that is abundantly clear to me is that the greatness of God is absolutely incomprehensible to us. There are millions of examples, and we could start now and continue until we die and not name all of the manifold works of our Lord. It is so easy for us to take the beauty of the world and the beauty of creation for granted. I want to share with you a story from our pilgrimage to the Holy Land and how we can often doubt miracles and the greatness of God. I would like to share with you the miracle of the holy fire. I've included an article about this miracle in your packets. When in the Holy Land and at the Holy Sepulchre, we had the ability to light candles from the holy fire. One of the oldest miracles of the world happens at the tomb of Christ on Pascha. On Holy Friday, all of the candles at the tomb are put out as Christ died and the tomb is dark. On the Saturday before Pascha, the Patriarch of Jerusalem walks into the tomb with an unlit candle. He comes out of the tomb with a candle that is miraculously lit with the holy fire. There are people who are in the church who can see a light swirling in the tomb. The light itself does not burn when it is initially lit. The miraculous light is then used to light candles of all of the faithful of the church. It is said that a candle lit from the light from the tomb can be used to light other lights. We lit candles from the light and came home and wanted to share this light with everyone. I brought the candles lit at the tomb, and when we had a Theophany of dinner, I shared the light with everyone there. There were people who questioned the light and the miracle. Oh, the patriarch probably has a lighter or matches, they said. The truth is, the patriarch is checked for all of these because there are so many who want to show that it is not a miracle. Also, the miracle has been happening prior to the existence of these items. Somehow, it is easier for us to think it is not a miracle, not by the hand of God, than to say it is a miracle. This ability to put more faith in man than in God goes to the crux of St. Maximus's words. Not only do we need to remember, O Lord, how manifold are thy works, but we must pray, Lord, have mercy on us sinners. The pilgrim describes the tendency to underestimate the greatness of God. In the book, the pilgrim states, "The most lamentable thing is the vanity of elementary knowledge which drives people to measure the divine by a human yardstick." I want to read those words again. "The most lamentable thing is the vanity of elementary knowledge which drives people to measure the divine by a human yardstick." To me, this passage serves as a segue to our dilemma, the second component of St. Maximus's words, putting too much faith in man. The second ignorance is to overestimate man's ability and ignore man's weakness. This is our dilemma. We don't give God enough credit, and we give man too much. This also brings me to the hardest part, being humble. In my example with the doctor, my spleen healed. It was God, and it wasn't him. Everyone came around to give praise to the doctor, but it was God. We often give too much credit to man and not enough to God. The starting point, and perhaps the end point, is one of humility in front of God. How easy it is for us to become self-centered. I will give you a personal example. I have to tell you that I feel a huge amount of pressure to say something that is worthy of this book. It has had such a profound impact on me that if I mess up and don't impart on you how wonderful the teachings are, that would be horrible. This is, in fact, more about me and my own pride, and I recognize that one of my demons is pride, and that this notion that my words would be moving is full of pride. In fact, if I'm truly honest with you, I am so full of pride that I want my words to be the most moving you've ever heard. I can become self-centered, worried about what you are thinking about me, wanting to be good. I recognize that this is counter to all of the teachings from the pilgrim. It is a struggle, the pilgrim explains the struggle so beautifully. The pilgrim reminds us over and over and over again to be humble, in those moments to say, "Jesus, Son of God, have mercy on me." There are several examples I would like to give that for me appear to be this pride and confidence in the ability of man. I work in a field where there is often a disrespect for religion. I often hear the notion, "Oh, I don't need church. I can pray and have a personal relationship with God. I live a good life. That's enough." When I think about that, there is such an ignorance in the statement. Honestly, a type of false pride. I am good enough, strong enough, self-sufficient enough. Somehow that any individual would know more than the church fathers or the saints is an overconfidence in the ability of man. There is a huge arrogance in the belief that I just need to live a good life, that I can do it on my own. Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner. The other example brings to mind the words of Father Benedict, the following that the pilgrim's path will lead you to orthodoxy. As many of you know, my husband was raised in the Baptist church. When we first married, we went to his church and we would alternate Sundays. It was fair. We would go 2 Sundays to Orthodox and 1 to the Baptist church. And when we would attend the Baptist church, many well-intentioned would ask me, "Do you know that you are saved?" This question and the statement that I needed to proclaim with absolute certainty that I am saved felt arrogant beyond words to me. It was uncomfortable. I am striving to have a relationship with God, but do I know that I'm saved? I hope so. I pray that I am. By the grace of God, yes. However, quite frankly, my judging them as arrogant is equally arrogant of me. How difficult the path, how easily we fall into snares and traps where we are judging others. Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner. It is also so easy to get derailed and to take any incident as a sign that I'm not appreciated, that no one cares. We also learn from the pilgrim that as we do more and know that we should do more, we get challenged more. We need to have a profound humility where we're not focused on outward reward, but for the glory of God. Our pilgrim was so aware of the importance of humility that when he cured the wife, he left quickly in the night because he did not want to succumb to vainglory. He is one of the most humble people, and he was aware of the dangers of pride. It can be so difficult to be like the pilgrim and be humble. I would be a millionaire if I got a penny for every time that I was so vain that I wanted, no, I expected praise, a thank you, a pat on the back. When I do not get a thank you, I'm quick to say that I'm not appreciated or I'm not going to continue. But honestly, those are the times that we are truly doing good works with the focus on others and not for praise. Those are the times when we are doing it with the right intention. I remind myself of this all the time, but still fall in the trap over and over and over again. Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner. There are many times when we think that we know more than someone else, and where our pride gets in the way because we think we know more. I have an example from my Lenten readings. It is the story of Moses and the fox from Anthony Bloom Beginning to Pray. The story is that Moses walks with a shepherd in the desert, and the shepherd takes care of his flock. The shepherd also milks the sheep, and at the end of the day, the shepherd takes the best milk and puts it in a bowl. Moses is puzzled and asks, "What's this?" "This is God's milk," the shepherd answered. "I always take the best milk and give it as an offering to God." Moses is puzzled and asks, "Does God drink it?" "Yes, every morning the bowl is empty." Moses, who is wise, feels the need to teach the shepherd about God and explains that God is a spirit and does not drink milk. The shepherd is heartbroken, but that night he stays up and watches and sees that a small fox comes to the bowl and drinks the milk. The next day, the shepherd is sad and comes to Moses and says, "You were right. God does not want my milk." Moses comforts the man by saying, "But now you know more about God." That evening, God speaks to Moses. "Moses, you were wrong. It is true that I am a pure spirit. Nevertheless, I always accepted with gratitude the milk which the shepherd offered me as an expression of his love. But since being a pure spirit, I do not need the milk. I shared it with the little fox, who is very fond of milk." Like Moses, sometimes we justify our words, thinking we are doing the right thing, setting someone on the correct path. We always need to be humble in our approach to others. I mentioned that one of my demons is pride. In many ways, I think it's the one that catches us all. We kind of think we know more, deserve more. I think of the passage from the pilgrim, "Call to mind the one to whom you are praying." We need to awaken that feeling of humility and reverent awe. Father Benedict, in his foreword, speaks of humility as an icon of truth. As we think about the pilgrim and his discussion about confession, we see the degree of humility needed. If you recall in the book, the pilgrim prepares for confession, examining his soul and listing all of his sins on paper. The confessor reads the description and provides the pilgrim with a list of how to prepare for confession. And the confessor gives our pilgrim a summary of the nature of confession, and there are four major points he describes that we need to confess. These are, 1, I do not love God, for if I loved God, I should continually be thinking about him with heartfelt joy. I do not love my neighbor. I do not have faith. I am full of pride and self-love. When I read the preparation for confession, I felt like the pilgrim. Oh my, but when you read the description, how true it is of all of us. I am reminded of this during the first week of Great Lent when we read St. Andrew's Canon, and the canon states, more than all men I have sinned, I have alone sinned against thee. At first I thought I'm a sinner, but in my readings I came across a passage that explains it all. The temptation to consider any other person worse than yourself lays an axe to the root of your soul. Do not judge. Assume you are the foremost of sinners. So once we have judged anyone, our sins are worse. Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner. We need to be totally honest and humble. It is truly through humility that we grow closer to God. It brings to mind St. Paul stating, my power is manifest in weakness. The kind of weakness where one is completely abandoned to the hand of God. In the book by Anthony Bloom, Beginning to Pray, he compares it to learning to write and having a person hold your hand. Lord, have mercy upon me, a sinner. Another example of this humility spoke to me in the farewell address given by Pope Benedict. I was deeply touched by his words, and I would like to share them with you. His words were so touching to me. Dear friends, I am happy to be with you, surrounded by the beauty of creation and your well wishes, which do me such good. Thank you for your friendship and your affection. You know this day is different for me than preceding ones. I am no longer the Supreme Pontiff of the Catholic Church, or I will be until 8 o'clock this evening and then no more. I am simply a pilgrim, beginning the last leg of his pilgrimage on this earth. But I would still thank you. I would still, with my heart, my love, my prayers, with my reflection, and with all my inner strength, like to work for the common good and the good of the Church and humanity. When I think about one of the most powerful men in the world, the Pope, and his words, they are so humble. His words spoke to me like the pilgrim and brought a smile to my face when I saw them in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Similarly, I think about a story that Father Basil told us several retreats ago, and if I remember correctly, an elder at Mount Athos shared the story with him. A priest dies and meets St. Peter at the gates of heaven. St. Peter tells the priest it takes 100 points to get into heaven. The priest thinks to himself, I was a good husband, a good father. So he starts with, I was a good husband. And St. Peter answers, 1 point. The priest gets a little nervous and adds, I'm a priest. Another point, now you have 2 points. The priest is now really nervous and cries out, Lord, have mercy on me. St. Peter opens the gates, welcome to heaven. The pilgrim shares with us that salvation lies not upon the reliance on our own action, but humility and reliance on God. Toward the end of the book, the pilgrim spends time with his Staudetz, the elder, and the elder shares with him the summary of how one is saved. Ask God, pray to God, ask for his help. The starting point is humility, recognizing we can't do it alone. We need God. It is with this humility that we then can face challenges. The challenges we face are very great. Remember that as we try to grow closer to God, the forces that grow stronger to keep us away from God also increase. I would like to briefly discuss two of the challenges that the pilgrim describes. One of those forces described is despair and despondency. The challenges are so great that one could fall into despair, into depression. The professor speaks with the pilgrim and the Staudetz and is concerned that it is so difficult that one might lose hope and not try. What if I fail? What if I can't do it? The pilgrim and his Staudetz encourage us with the words, none of these small acts is in vain. All will be taken into account by the all-seeing eye of God. Our pilgrim adds, if it were not possible, God would not have bidden us all to do it. Pray without ceasing. Do not despair. Pray. In the book, the Staudetz tells the officer, who says, I don't understand when reading the Bible, That it's okay, he answers. Keep reading, even if you don't understand. The devil does. Similarly, I love the quote of St. John Chrysostom, lodging with the gospel wards off the spirits of darkness. If we think about Moses and the fox, the shepherd's prayer of gratitude, leaving out the milk, is also an example. Another challenge that we face is dealing with others who frustrate us. I would like to take our last few minutes focusing on how the pilgrim deals with people who can be frustrating. As part of the journey, our pilgrim meets a fellow pilgrim who is angry. The response from the Stotitz is, pray for them. The Stotitz, the elder, calls the pilgrim to have empathy for those who anger us. He quotes St. Mark the Ascetic, the soul which is inwardly united to God becomes in the greatness of its joy like a good-natured, simple-hearted child and now condemns no one, Greek, heathen, Jew, nor sinner, but looks at them alike with the sight that has been cleansed, finds joy in the whole world and wants everybody to praise God. It is with humility we are able to soften our hearts to others. It is harder to judge when you think of St. Andrew's canon. But it is easier said than done. It is so easy to get derailed. That is exactly why we need the habit of prayer. When it gets hard, it keeps us focused where we need to be. Discipline, not focusing on our personal need, but rather on humility, understanding that we need to practice, we need to go to church. Our pilgrim clearly states, one must labor in prayer, pray about everything. The Christian life is summed up in prayer. It is the most important duty in every Christian. With prayer, there are no off times. I think of our Junior UOL t-shirt several years ago. The UOL has no off season. Without prayer, you cannot do anything good. It is impossible to do good without prayer. And I want to end with my absolutely favorite quote of the book. St. John Karpatsky in the Philokalia states that when we pray the Jesus prayer, when we call upon the holy name and say, have mercy upon me, a sinner, then to every such petition, the voice of God answers in secret, child, thy sins be forgiven thee.